Welcome to Veterans Connected, where maintenance and reliability expert and military veteran Eric Bevavino connects with fellow veterans in the industry during each episode, exchanging their experiences and discussing the transition from the military to industry and the resources that led them to where they are today. The Veterans Connected podcast is proudly produced by the industry's leading network and learning community, Mobius Connect. Eric, over to you.
Hi, I'm Eric Bevavino, host of the Mobius Connect podcast focused on connecting military veterans to the maintenance and reliability community. Our aim here is to bridge the understanding gap between the military and civilian worlds, thereby improving the veteran transition experience and ultimately providing hope and helping hand to any of our brothers and sisters out there struggling to find their way. We'll do this by interviewing veterans who have successfully made it through. For this session, we've chosen to interview one such Navy veteran, Laura Hatcher, whose fascinating and patriotic story is a must-listen for anyone interested in joining us on this mission. Hey, Laura, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, me too. I've really been looking forward to this since we first spoke, connecting through LinkedIn in sort of a roundabout way, the algorithms, perhaps, but your annual outreach newsletter really kind of caught my attention, which we can talk about through the next hour, but really a best-in-class type of thing. And Laura, you're not only the second female guest on the show, you're the first Naval Academy grad, first member of the Naval Academy Minority Leadership Association, first member of the Joint Women's Leadership Symposium, a SkillBridge mentor, a fellow Navy Dive School graduate, hoo-yah, mom of three boys and a dog mom to a black lab named Mad Max, and now a professional photographer telling stories through pictures. Wow, very impressive. I'm sure I missed some stuff. What else do you do in there, you know, in your free time, right?
Yeah. I would say if you were following me on LinkedIn, you would probably say, hey, doesn't it say something about drones and a Harley? And it's just an indicator that I grew up as a only child, so I was pretty bored. And I tried everything.
Nice. You know, Harleys usually aren't for kids, you know, kind of a midlife thing typically, but hey, whatever works, right? You were brought up in the Navy, right?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you were a Navy brat, is that right?
I was a Navy brat, yes. I grew up, I guess I have to give a shout out to the Air Force too, because my biological father was Air Force.
Right.
And I would go visit him on his Air Force bases. But I was raised by my Navy stepfather, and of course we were on Navy bases. And at one point in time, both my fathers were stationed in Spain at the same time. One in Madrid, the Air Force used to have a base up there at Torrejon. I think they since gave it back to the country, to the government of Spain, and then. The Navy, which is still there, obviously, in Rota, where we lived. So I could go visit on just a short airplane ride and see my dad on the summers, which was just a fantastic memory if you think about it, the fact that they coincidentally were located on the same place.
Well, that's fantastic. I mean, the universe works in interesting ways, right? And
absolutely.
How cool would it be to be a kid growing up and be stationed in Spain? I'm sure there's pros and cons of moving every couple of years and all that, but probably got a lot of unique experiences that many other folks didn't have the opportunity to. I guess is that how you remember it?
Yeah, I would positive? Say in my younger years, very positive experience because you don't really know any better. As you start to become a curmudgeon as a teenager, You start to get pissed off about your surroundings, right? And I was around 14 or 15, and we were stationed in the Republic of Panama. And I would say that's not the top of the list of places to be for junior prom. It was about 5 minutes before Noriega had his little tantrum and we stormed the place. So tensions were kind of high. You know, we families were evacuated out, you know, before that operation. But Wouldn't recommend going to high school there.
Interesting. I've been to Panama multiple times while on active duty, taking a submarine through the Panama Canal, and then multiple times in the reserves too, on both ends. And it's interesting to see it now
I imagine.
versus 30 years ago. I mean, the Special Forces compound on the, I guess it would be the north side, coming from the Caribbean, from the Atlantic side, was, pristine. And back in, gee, this must have been 1992, maybe, when that was happening. And then just returned perhaps about 10 or 12 years ago, had to have been about 12 years ago, with EOD, Operational Support Unit 10. We were doing an exercise down there, and it was all overgrown and, dilapidated. And, a bunch of guys in camis, not probably our guys, though it would be pretty hard to tell the difference, I suppose, at this point, just sharpening their knives and cleaning their weapons and stuff. Looked a little bit hazardous, but anyway, that's a story for another time,
Yeah.
when we share an adult beverage or whatever in the future. I'll
Well,
tell you
that's
that
yet
story.
another example of how our paths aren't necessarily parallel, but they definitely have crossed over some of the same meridians, right?
For sure, for sure. And it's interesting, when you sent out the newsletter, I was like, okay, this looks like a very interesting Navy veteran. And I didn't really pick up on the dive school side of it until you mentioned it. And another very interesting coincidence. So,
Yeah.
yeah, cool.
Well, much
So,
like you, it's buried deep in the bio. I mean, you know when someone's actually researching you when they pull out something obscure, right?
Yeah, without a doubt, without a doubt. And so our listeners know, the information that I got about you and your family was on our pre-call, so I wasn't
Right,
in
right.
there sort of stalking you online to figure out what your family situation was. Yeah, we usually have pre-calls for these, so. And that was really nice too, so thank you for doing that, Laura. So why don't we dial it back a little bit? You gave us some information already about, where you grew up, influences on your life, how things got started, and how you got into the Navy, and what were your career steps kind of after that?
Yeah, so I joined mainly because of the influence of my stepfather. He was a retired E-9 Master Chief, just a wonderful human being, and a disciplinarian though. So I grew up in a very strict household. I joke, but it's really true. He introduced white glove inspections when I was a teenager.
Oh, okay. Yeah, my
So.
kids would really do well with that. Yeah.
I was expected to do chores. I got allowance, but very disciplined. No curfew, Laura, because you're not going out. So why do you need a curfew? No boyfriends. We don't acknowledge that. You need to focus on your studies. So I also joke, but it's still true, that the Naval Academy was way easier than living in my home.
Wow. So what did he do in the Navy then as a
He
Master
was a
Chief?
cryptologist,
Okay.
and so and they no longer have CTAs, and the A branches, an administrative cryptologist. They did away with those. The yeomans picked up those requirements. However, CTs, they're a special breed. They definitely aren't. I mean that in a positive way. But he was all about security. I did not have the need to know. Most of the places that we lived in, I had no clue until I was well into my own military career. I would say probably halfway through my military career, light bulbs were going on as to what my father's actually occupation was when I was a child. Mainly because it was just so secretive, and so national security requirements, those kind of things. And it was just neat to learn in retrospect, right? As I became eventually I became an intelligence officer, but I joined the Navy through the Naval Academy. My dad introduced me to a young Marine that had recently graduated, and that was such a negative experience meeting that Marine because he insulted
Oh
me.
no. Oh no.
He insulted me during our orientation visit. My dad thought it would be a good idea to sit down with someone who had some perspective on the academy. We're in Panama. I'm 15, and the young man brings out all of the yearbooks that we're all required to buy when we're there. And he's getting me excited, rah, rah, rah. And then at the end, he says something to the effect of, "Well, it's a great place, but you'll never make it because you're just a girl." So, needless to say,
Challenge accepted, right?
challenge accepted. I went home completely pissed off.
As you should have been, yeah.
I, you know, and this is in the day of bubble sheets. You know, there's no online application process, so I applied. Long story short, the application got lost overseas, and then when we transferred from Republic of Panama to San Diego, that was his next duty station. There was a recruiting effort from the Naval Academy for athletes, and my high school got a form, you know, for all of the sports, and I was doing everything, track, basketball, volleyball, and I just filled out one of those forms for, I think, every sport. I figured I'll just throw it all
Throw it,
up.
yeah, see
Maybe
what sticks.
something will
Yeah,
stick. And
yeah,
I caught the attention of the volleyball coach. And we don't say that we recruit at the service academies, but I know I got recruited. And it was a great opportunity. They sent me to preparatory school because being a military brat, my schooling wasn't as consistent,
yeah.
right? Because you're moving around all the time. The standards, you know, I started off in as a British citizen originally, and so my elementary school years were very different, especially since the focus wasn't on math and science. It was more on the arts and music and writing and reading. So
Interesting. Yeah.
as I got older, you know, I to this day I admit I don't do math in public, even though I went to a math and science school. But yeah, I needed that extra help, and so the coach nominated me to go to the Naval Academy Preparatory School, which is in Newport, Rhode Island. It's by invitation only. There are foundation schools for the service academies that you can apply to, but each of the service academies have their respective prep school, which is typically invitation only. If you make it through that program, then back then, at least, you were guaranteed, if you stayed out of trouble and you kept your grades up, you're guaranteed to come back and start over. Go to the Naval Academy.
So is really a is it after high school or is it a replacement for high
It's after
school?
high school.
After high
Think
school, okay.
13th grade, but really,
Okay.
if you're from the Navy fleet, think the old programs like Boost, you know, where or Seaman to Admiral. Those programs were designed to give just a little bit of extra help, right? So NAPS, when I was there, was made up of quite a few athletes that, for whatever reason, like me, probably didn't do well on their SAT scores. I brag I have the lowest SAT scores in the state of California. Or fleet returnees, you know, sailors. And I did this when I was in leadership positions. I was constantly looking for young sailors who were my top-notch sailors, had the right age, right? Because there's a minimum requirement in terms of age or maximum by time, you know, that you can't be so old. And I don't recall exactly what that is now, but you can't apply and be a certain age, right, when you get there. So, but there's that sweet spot where between, you know, I joined the Navy at 17 and maybe around 20, 21, where you can still apply to the Naval Academy from the fleet. And that school was perfect for that. I actually had quite a few classmates that came from the fleet, you know, that were second and some in some cases first classes. They just needed to be a refresher on how to study in a college atmosphere, you know? And some of them were wicked smart coming out of nuke school, you know.
Yeah, here's a teaser. We have one of those Well, he didn't go to NAS, but on the list of future episodes, we have a guy who was a Navy nuke enlisted, and he'll talk about all that
Yeah.
stuff. But this is really great, Laura, and I would say perhaps broadly unknown to like the general public
Oh, yeah.
as to these prep schools leading into the academies, right? I was familiar, having been up to Newport for Surface Warfare Officer School. I saw NAPS and I was like, what was that? And then I
Right.
ended up working with another Navy veteran officer who was a teacher at NAPS. I think he taught sailing perhaps. And it's interesting, right? It's because, I mean, people may think it just is what it is, right? It's just, if you graduate from high school, you don't get your recommendation from your congressperson and all that, you don't have a shot, and perhaps it's not always the case, right?
No,
So,
and actually, and I learned this as a parent. I have three grown sons. One of them is about to graduate from the Merchant Marine Academy, and he got invited to go to a prep school I had never heard of until the invitation came, Marion Military Institute, which is the oldest 2-year junior college in the United States. Everybody's heard of Valley Forge. Well, Marion was first, then there's Valley Forge, and then there's two others in New Mexico, I believe. And somewhere else, I can't remember off the top of my head. But those schools, and that particular one, what was interesting there is you could get invited, like the service academies had certain number of quotas that they would allot. And same thing, if you made it through the program, then you could start at the service academy that invited you, or you could actually apply. And basically, for me, this showed great perseverance for a young person, right? I didn't get invited. I didn't get in directly to that service academy, but I'm going to go to this school that's going to better my chances, and I'm going to try again. And I'm not going to say they reward that, but it's definitely, I used to help the Naval Academy as a blue and gold officer recruit and interview as part of the admissions program. And I would look to see, those were the indicators I was looking for. Is there a parent pushing this, or do they really want this? Have they gone to visit? Have they look? Are they aware of other service academies, all options of getting in? And Marion Military Institute, you could go there, go through the program, and apply almost like a red shirt, right? Just a walk off, a walk on. Just I want to go to this service academy, and I'm here. You're taking a chance, right? But if you don't make it, you can stay on for the 2-year associate's program and then transfer to another college or another ROTC program. So, and that's not to say that ROTC programs aren't just as good. There's always that rivalry, but
Sure.
I'm an ROTC mom now too. So, and I realized that the younger son, he was much smarter than the two that went to the service academy because he's got the best of both worlds.
Well, being an ROTC graduate myself from Penn State, putting on a uniform once a week and still getting the other benefits and having a kind of a 1 week plebe year
Yep.
Instead of a full year was probably better for me, to be honest, and more enjoyable. But
Yes,
yeah,
definitely. Definitely.
I didn't have a Master Chief as a dad. I didn't come from a military family. We still had discipline to a degree, but no white glove
No white
inspection.
gloves? Oh,
No,
you missed out.
Fantastic. Okay, so NAPS, and then what was your academy experience like?
I would say it's positive. I helped that I was on a varsity team, because that's another family, another support mechanism. I wasn't the greatest student, but definitely was determined to make it through, and it helped that I had that volleyball group of women to, because you can commiserate together.
Sure. Yeah, an upperclassman you're allowed to talk to, right? Whereas,
Exactly,
maybe that's off
exactly.
limits in other scenarios, right? Yeah.
Plus, but it was a little stressful too because, you know, there's an expectation. I felt like there was an expectation that I owed it to the coach and the team to stay for the entire 4 years, even if, you know, the first year I didn't play as a plebe, you know, there's no need for me. So I sat the bench. And so I was kind of, you know, a little not disenchanted, but definitely disappointed that I couldn't contribute more. But then once the senior that was in my position graduated, of course, I got to step in and start doing what I wanted to do in terms of volleyball. But it's still tough, right? Being a full-time athlete, traveling and trying to keep up with the rigors of the service academy. Academics are no joke. Everybody is required to graduate with a Bachelor of Science in something, right? Whether,
Oh, okay.
yeah, that's
Yeah.
the distinction that people don't realize. So even if you're an English major, you're still taking differential equations and electric, you know, electrical engineering and naval architecture.
Yay. Yeah.
Lots of math.
Yeah, I can't spell geek without a double E, right? Yeah.
Exactly. So anyway, so I made it obviously, and then from there I chose originally to go, as we meant, what we talked about before, into the diving community, and mainly I think the influence from that was the just being an athlete. You know, I was really drawn to the community that felt and acted and upheld PT standards. You know, physical training was the core of that community. As you know, you could not be a Navy diver without being fit. That gear is so heavy, regardless of whether you're a male or female. The other reason why I was drawn to it is because growing up, you know, I never wanted to be seen as someone who couldn't do something because of my gender. That was the only community at the time that allowed women, but under the premise that the requirements were identical to men. So, you know, you and I would step into that school, and the expectation was that we would do a minimum of 6 pull-ups, you know, whatever number of push-ups it was, the running, the swimming, all that gear. You know, there was no special chart because I was a woman, like the greater service, where there's a woman's, you know, requirements, physical standards versus the men. And that pleased me, right? Because I felt like that's one less thing that I would be
Sure,
judged
yeah.
on, right? Because we have to do, as a woman in the service, especially back then, you had to do things twice as 10 times, I don't know, let me exaggerate, 100 times better than the average guy.
Well, without a doubt, without a doubt. Yeah, I mean, and people probably can relate. Well, the easiest way to relate is through the movie with Cuba Gooding Jr., Men of Honor, right? To understand a little
Right.
more about the Navy diving community and the racism that was going on back then. Not even sexism. There were
Right.
no females in dive school in that movie, and whether they were or they weren't at that time, I kind of doubt it.
Right.
But that's yeah. We had a Navy diver or a line officer from another ROTC, as well as a Coast Guard, two females in our class, as well as this was 9040 BDO, so back in 1990, as well as three foreign officers, an Egyptian, I believe it was a Nigerian, and a Thai, little Thai guy.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, we operate like a team. I mean, relatively diverse, but mostly, white kids, white boys, that hadn't really become men yet, because that's what the Navy does. And I was happy to see that the diving community was, I guess more diverse and more accepting, or somewhat diverse and somewhat accepting in the special operations community, as well as EOD, right? As I learned more about the EOD community, I never went to EOD school or anything like that. I think you might have transitioned into Intel
Right.
at the same time I was transitioning into the reserves, because it was a hard and fast requirement that if you were 1140, you were
Right.
going to EOD or you're doing something else.
Exactly.
So interesting. Okay, so you got in, you went to dive school. Did you were you able to go to second class school while you were at the academy? Did
So I
you
went to scuba school. So I
scuba
went to
school?
scuba
Okay.
school as a midshipman, which is where I got the taste of, I got the
Sure. Yeah.
bug.
Yeah.
And then I went back after graduation to basic diving officer school, BDO, in 1992. And then I went out to my first command, which was a salvage vessel out of Pearl Harbor, which sounds amazing, except for I didn't get to see much of Pearl Harbor because we were always on the way. arduous sea duty, I will tell you, being on a small boy like that, always out picking up whatever has dropped from the sky, from the ship, the anchors, running aground, you name it, we were like a tow truck, 24/7 on call, always on the way.
Which ship was that, Laura?
USS Salvor in
Salvor. Okay, so the new
back
ARS
then,
class.
the new.
Yeah.
And
Now
then
you didn't have the joy of being on a what an asbestos-ridden preserver, or
preserver, yep.
yeah, that was on the P boat and
Or the opportune, right?
the
Opportune.
Opportune. Yeah. These little creek boats, but yeah, interesting. Okay, so you were on the Salvor.
Yes. And then
Okay.
I did put in a package to leave because, much like what you said, you were required to go EOD, and I knew my limitations. All joking aside, I'm not technically inclined, and the last thing we want to do is rely on the dumb jock and her 10 fingers to defuse a bomb, right?
Red wire or blue wire? Yeah. Let's do the
No.
statistical analysis. Now let's just flip a coin. Yeah.
So it was my stepfather who basically mentored me, into what my options were. And at that point, I was pretty disenchanted with my first tour. It was arduous. I had a tough leadership. Those are the surface warfare officer days where we eat our young, and I was ready to go home. But my stepdad, he put his arm around me and he's like, "No, I won't say explicitly what he said. This is probably a PG crowd, but he says, let's try something else." Let's try something else. And he introduced the whole concept of lateral transfer. Because as a junior officer at sea, when am I going to learn about the ins and outs of the administrative side of the Navy?
Right, you're busy all the time.
Right.
Yeah, all the
And so
time.
he helped me figure out the instruction and how to put my request in, and said, try intelligence or cryptology. Those are the So I did. And I had no clue what I was getting into. No clue. And I had no clue that my dad was absolute mafia in these two communities. And when I say mafia, I mean he knew everybody.
Like
He
the OG, yeah.
right, because at that
Cold War crypto techs probably served John Walker and all
Exactly. Because at
that,
that point, he had retired and was now a civilian doing the exact same thing
right?
for all the various iterations of commands that were at in San Diego. So Air PAC, Nav War Com, all those different places, right? All the acronyms that are hanging out in San Diego. But I had no clue how much he was embedded in the security aspect, of those communities. Anyway, I get picked up, and then I realize there were senior people in that community. We didn't have the same last name, my stepfather and I, but there were senior people in that community that knew him, that had been inspected by him, in terms of the security programs. And so that was kind of eye-opening.
So you were kind of like the undercover boss type of thing, and they're like, "What?" You're like, "What do you think about this guy?" And they're like, "Oh, she's not related to him." Yeah. Oh.
I never really brought him up. Only once I brought him up, but I never really didn't. I didn't understand the connection myself, So it's interesting. But I'm glad for his mentorship. He's, looking back now, he was always steering me in the right direction. It was always at the right time. It was never, never overt. It was just kind of a little nudge here and there.
Coaching.
Yep.
Yeah.
And like a good Master Chief does to the JO, right?
What would we be without our NCOs, our senior chiefs and master chiefs?
Exactly. He was funny. He would say, like someone would ask him, "Well, how come you didn't stay beyond 20 years?" And he'd say things like, "Well, I didn't want to salute that Ensign Jensen," meaning me. I was the Ensign Jensen.
You get a silver dollar out of it, come on.
Exactly. And then so the rest is history, as they say, right? An intelligence officer, I did all the at that point as an O3, I've got a SWO pin, I got a dive pin, I'm walking into Intel school and I'm expecting to learn Intel. They made me the class leader, which freaked me out because I was just there to learn, right? Not babysit 36 snot nose ensigns who did not behave as well as some of the seamen that I had on my last ship, because it's their some in some cases they were fresh out of the Naval Academy, and brand new ensigns out of the Naval Academy, they we have no social skills. We
I may have seen a little bit of that on a cruise or two, but it was 50-50. So what I just chalked it up was, they're just the same as everybody else. Every other person you're going to get.
And so,
It's
and then
hard though. Sorry. It's hard to, I believe it's a challenge, even though I didn't do it, and you can speak to it better than I can for sure. But to be a late teenager, early 20-year-old, really in that growing up phase of your life, other people are going away to college. You're going away, but it's very structured, and certain things are off limits, no can do, that type of thing, where other people are figuring it out through whatever they're doing, frat parties or hanging out with their friends or doing working or doing whatever. So you miss that. I think, you're working in a lot of different ways. I'm not
Absolutely.
trying to,
You're spot on.
yeah.
It's life skills, right? We you're in an institution for 4 years. Everything is basically provided for you. I used to joke you could walk in completely naked and you're going to come out with an entire life full of uniforms and leadership training, confidence, integrity, hopefully, all those things. But do you know how to sign a lease on your apartment? Do you know how to check? Do you know, back then when we had checks, do you know how to pay your utility bills? No, you know nothing. Now, the life skills that you gain, as you said, as a college, because watching my eldest son go through, college experience, it was interesting to see. He didn't necessarily struggle with all this stuff because he was learning it each year. He moved from the dorm and then out into town to the apartment and understanding, those relationships that you have to form with the community and the stores and all that stuff, just to survive as a college student in town. But yeah, it was that's hard, right? Coming out of a institution.
Well, and just the simple lack of partying, right? You get out on a cruise, you're drinking till you puke or whatever, and
I'll
that
never
was a
admit
week that was
that.
every weekend, at Penn State. No, just kidding. But yeah, and I mean, hey, everybody goes through their own thing. So you were managing, you were the class
I was
lead.
a class leader for my intelligence group, my first intelligence class, which is stressful, right? Because I as a lieutenant, the expectation is that you know everything. Well, I don't know anything about intelligence or how to, how to do all the things that we were required to do at school, but obviously made it through just fine. And from there, it's just a very eclectic career, not a traditional intelligence officer career, obviously, because it didn't start off traditionally, right? As a lateral transfer. But I'm really glad looking back now that I did have that first sea tour because I think it gave me an element of leadership that at the time in the intelligence community wasn't there because that was not the career progression, right? It wasn't a traditional line officer way of learning leadership. There was no, division officer, department head, XO, CO. There's none of that progression in the intelligence community. You went from maybe a watch floor where you're one of one, you're part of a team, right? But you're not necessarily in charge of people. And then it might have gone to a squadron where you've got, one or two ISs under you. And then you may go to another watch floor as a lieutenant. And then you go to staff positions, to a joint command, So really, when I was in that community, with the exception of how I did it, you could make it all the way to maybe 04 or 05 before you actually had people to
Wow.
lead.
Interesting.
Right. And so I was thankful that I had so much leadership, just off of that one sea tour, of taking care of sailors and people and money. Obviously at a much smaller level, but I was still a department head on that ARS, right? Because it was so small.
Right, so small, and I should have said it or maybe mentioned it before. I'm glad you did. I mean, busy means different things to different people, but when you're a junior officer on a small ship, you get all sorts of responsibilities that you wouldn't necessarily other folks on maybe aircraft carriers or whatever
Right.
wouldn't necessarily get. I mean, I didn't go to supply school, but I was the supply officer for a while, right?
I was a
And
sub-O too. I was the food service officer on my ship.
So and thank goodness for NCOs. I mean, just had a tremendous senior chief and chief that were just making sure everything was right. And I kind of show up and sign all the requisition forms and do this and that. And when the horse trading came in, but also the crypt, what did we call it? The crypto officer, the people who went to get the crypto. And there always had to be two people,
Right.
and back in the day before real digital stuff. But anyway, it's, I mean, you learned how to really be multifunctional in all the aspects of the ship. So I'd highly recommend, if anybody wants to grow up fast and get leadership fast, get your butt on a small boat, small
Right.
ship in the Navy, and you'll see what that's like.
Well, interesting enough, I obviously went through this program as a result of wanting to change my designator, but now that is a path, right? Surface warfare with the intelligence option. So in other words, you have to go through
Ah.
another year, first tour or two. I'm not sure how many it is. I'm dating myself now, but you go and get your surface warfare pin, and then you're eligible to go into the intelligence community after that, which I think is fantastic. I think,
Well, I would have loved that.
yeah,
I
I think,
mean, what
well, there's
beside
light at the end of the tunnel, right?
besides the people and the leadership opportunities, the biggest thing I miss from the Navy and Navy Reserve were the monthly intel briefs. Because I mean, it reminds you how many bad people are out there still doing bad things, and why we have a mission and we need to be really vigilant. Because a crack in the door is all they need,
Right.
and a bunch of people get killed. So
Also tells you, makes you scared of what's really going on behind closed doors that we can't talk
sometimes it's better not to know.
It
Sometimes
definitely is.
ignorance is bliss, right?
Exactly. So anyway, so I finished the intelligence career as an O6, going back and forth between shore and sea duties and joint commands, and just had a fantastic career. I really don't have anything negative to say. I mean, maybe my first tour in the Navy was probably hard, but I always say even failure produces opportunities, right? Not that I failed at that. It just wasn't for me. And I learned as a very junior officer that you got to keep trying. And so I can leverage all of those lessons from every single one of those leadership positions through those 31 years into today as a small business owner. So.
Oh, well said. Beautiful. Yeah, I mean, continuous stream of thought there, and just a fantastic. I mean, failure is always a learning experience, right?
Yes,
So I'll sum that
definitely.
up. Well, it's a good segue into what you're doing today, and
Yeah.
where has all this experience led you to now?
Exactly. Small business owner, professional photographer in Old Town Alexandria. I have been in business technically since 2017. So that's math in public. What's that? Almost 8 years now. But I've been full time
You did
since.
it well.
I
Perfect.
had to memorize it first.
Yeah.
I've been full time since 2019, specifically October 1st, 2019. I don't even remember that date because, because it was 6 months before that pandemic.
I remember October. Yeah, all the trade shows were being canceled in the line of work that I was in. And then, and
Yeah.
then late January just was like, boom. Yeah.
Exactly. And I invested in a small studio, which was reasonable in terms of affordability. So I was able to kind of shelter in place, literally, because the governor of Virginia shut down all retail around March timeframe for about 3 or 4 months. And so, I was paying out of pocket for a while because and but it was that was fine. It gave me an opportunity to work on the business instead of in the business. It was also an interesting time to actually focus on where you wanted to go. So I took that time to write a business plan because I didn't see the value in that in the beginning.
Just go, go, go. I'm gonna get
Just
this
go.
going. Yeah. We'll figure it out. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, the Navy teaches that, right? The
Absolutely.
Navy taught me two speeds, fast asleep and full speed ahead.
That's right. Bias
Nothing
to
in
action.
between.
Yeah, let's go.
But yeah, once I, the first couple of years in business, it wasn't so much about making money as it was to learn the craft and do something that I wanted to do. And I like to caveat this for those that are thinking about getting into entrepreneurship. If you don't have the military experience, just know that I am leveraging, my pension and my health care. All those my disability so that I can fuel my passion, right? I'm not doing this from in a vacuum, and it would be very challenging, I think, to be able to run this business if I didn't have that supplemental income, right? But on the same token, if you are a retiree, that's the prime reason why you should consider going into entrepreneurship. Because I will tell you, as I was leaving the military, we're kind of conditioned to think that we have to go back into some kind of corporate arena or some contracting or a cubicle with a commute. And if you're a senior officer, you're conditioned to think that you have to make a ridiculous amount of money to equate to all the benefits, right, that you are getting now. Because people will put a monetary value on the healthcare and then on how much your base pay was and all of that and come up with some grand number. Let's just say you need to make $200,000 a year. Okay, you're not leaving the military and getting a $200,000 job without some pain, right? Without drama, politics, probably long, long hours. And oh, by the way, they're not going to hire you just because you have the title captain or commanding officer or admiral in front of your name. You have to actually have some tangible skill sets that they see. And half the battle is translating those skill sets, right, into a resume that resonates with that civilian employer. And so my take is, well, the military is going to pay you to wake up for the rest of your life. So why not go find a job that you actually want to do that may not pay as much because it's probably something you're passionate about, and we don't get paid for amazing things, right?
Right, this is your chance to live your best life and do what
Right.
you want,
And
right? Yeah, you've
that
earned
small
it.
paycheck,
Yeah.
exactly, that small paycheck that you're going to get to do something that you're passionate about, coupled with all of those, that pension, that disability, maybe those benefits, now you're kind of back where you were. Right. And if you're like my family, we lived within our means, forced to live within our means. Many places that I got stationed in, they weren't affordable to live in.
Sure, right. Yeah, yeah.
Hawaii comes to mind. I couldn't
Yeah,
afford to
right.
live there.
Well, DC in and of itself is expensive. I mean, a lot of these places, you're in prime territory of, they're
California.
usually nice places, on the shore, vacation areas. I mean, they're not cheap. They're not
Right,
cheap.
absolutely. DC is definitely up there. California was up there. Even I was stationed in Pennsylvania, and I had to commute about 45 minutes away from the base that I was stationed at because it was just a very, very affluent, high cost area, and 45 minutes got me somewhere that was somewhat affordable.
Well, you could manage within your means, like you said, instead
Yep.
of taking a mortgage that you can possibly deal with and just, letting the cards fall where they may. A lot of stress in that sort of approach, the not living in within your means approach. Yeah. Well, fantastic. So you got started. It was COVID. You built a business plan. You had a chance to set the foundation. And, what happened from there? Did you specialize in military stuff, or where did you go?
Yeah, so it's always good advice, although I didn't necessarily adhere to it, but in the photography industry, people say, you should always niche down, right? You should have one genre, one focus, and go gangbusters with that. But as you know from talking to me now, I get bored quite easily, so that did not take that advice. Started focus on things that I enjoyed. I actually started off my photography career taking pictures of classic cars in classic car shows. So I have thousands and thousands of pictures of classic cars. I'm here to tell you there's no money to be made in classic cars because
You've tested that one, yeah.
the people that own those cars are so busy spending their money keeping them up. So they might buy a picture or two or a calendar, but yes. But when I had the opportunity to take on that studio from a mentor that had it before me, I didn't know how to take headshots. I just said, this is a great opportunity. I'm not gonna miss this opportunity to get this prime location, great space. I'll figure out the rest. Because another lesson from the Navy, right? We don't go into our commands knowing how to do the job we're going into. They'd sent me to XO or CO school, but I've never been an XO or a CO before I took command. I'll just figure it out when I get there. And that's the same thing. I looked at the studio opportunity and said, okay, I'll figure out how to take headshots when I get there. And you surround yourself with mentors and educational opportunities to learn, and you get better from there. And so I do headshots now for military transitioning veterans because that's what I was, and I understand fully the sentiment of leaving an organization and then suddenly feeling like you're adrift, right? Because now that uniform that I wore was my resume. I never had to open my mouth. People could see the bling. People can see the professionalism. The integrity was there before I even had to say anything. And then suddenly it's gone. Now I'm putting all of those expertise, if you will, on a piece of paper, and I'm trying to convince you that I can do the job, which is probably going to be the most emotional experience for those who were defined by their rank or defined by their title. And as you may be good at something. You may get promoted for what you did through that entire career, but you don't necessarily love it. You may not be passionate about it. So now you're leaving the organization and you're like, well, what do I want to do? And I tell those who are transitioning now, when I ask you, do you know what you want to do? It's okay to say no. Do not expect to have, I do not expect you to have an answer right away. You shouldn't know what you want to do. You've just been told what to do for the last 20, 30 years. And now you don't have to follow exactly what someone says. You can do whatever you want. That's daunting, right?
Right, can be scary, right? Because once you're swimming in that pool for so long, you can forget yourself, right?
Absolutely.
And just a sort of shout out to another episode. Jeff Gibson has a company called Opline, which just marries up the different skills, the military skills with job requisitions or job descriptions from many corporations. But yeah, you gotta find yourself. Also, a helpful thing, and you may have some recommendations here too, Laura, on perhaps books or people to listen to sort of recast or follow a process to figure out where you want to go. There's a designing your life, they're designing your career stuff, and really, I think the Designing Your Life book that I've recently gone through takes you through sort of like, if you like the product development sort of process, and I'm an engineer and I like that type of thing, so it actually, winds you through what do you like to do, and how do
Right.
you, so what is your best, what would be your ideal job, and just go through all these exercises, and it helps, right? As
Yeah,
well as talking to Laura Hatcher,
definitely. Not
who
necessarily,
is
but
willing to give advice, right? Or coaching, right? Like she got from her parents
yeah.
along the way. And are you also doing this for some mentees, either in the associations you're involved in, or maybe even SkillBridge, I think you mentioned?
Yep. So I was a SkillBridge provider. SkillBridge is the DoD program that affords active duty members the opportunity to go and do an internship the last few months of their commitment with their service. And it's forever changing. I wouldn't necessarily say that the newer instructions lately are supporting entrepreneurship anymore, from what I understand, but I think it's an amazing program that the last up to 6 months I could have gone to intern or hang out with somebody else in an industry that I aspire to be in, right? And that one of the reasons why I accepted doing it, I wasn't a fan at first because I didn't want to be responsible for anybody but myself. That's the whole reason why I love being an entrepreneur. I can turn off the alarm clock if I want to, unless I have a client, obviously. But I then reflected that, hey, if there had been a photographer that would have let me sit side saddle for 6 months with them, man, can I imagine what I would have been so far ahead when I first started. So that's one of the reasons why I did it. I'd probably end up being a mentor, whether you like it or not. Everywhere I go, right? So you come into a session with me, you leave knowing so much more about photography. If you're a military transitioning veteran, you've probably walked out with 25 resources or sea stories. We have so many resources now, it's almost overwhelming in the transition space. But I'll just throw out a few that are worth looking into. So Military Officer Association of America, MOA, has a transitioning program if you're a member, and those are very good and are periodic throughout the year. American Corporate Partners, ACP, they're an organization that will pair up corporate members with transitioning veterans and give them mentorship in the corporate world. I used them, that was pretty good. The Army's Pathfinder program. I was pretty impressed with them, much like the Transition Assistance Program, TAP. But I feel like the Pathfinder program was better because they tailor to the individual, whereas TAP is one size fits all. It's death by PowerPoint for a solid week. And obviously, TAP is a requirement. And there are personalities. LinkedIn is your friend when you're trying to transition. There are personalities on LinkedIn. If you type in transitioning veteran or those types of words, you're going to see people that are in it and in that space. I caution you to the ones that are trying to monetize helping you. Be careful with those. But there are plenty of free resources out there where, and I can send you offline some links to a couple of these resources that really help you do all the things that you don't even realize you need to do, right? How to translate that FIT rep or that evaluation into something that's actually comprehensible to that civilian employee.
Well, without a doubt, and you hit on one of the things that I think we've noticed through this podcast or just in general. There are a ton of resources, but which ones are fake? Which ones are okay, but you have to pay for it, right? And which ones are free and probably better than anything you pay for? So that'd be great, Laura. If you could send those links, we'll attach them to the show, and then people can go directly to them.
And that's not to say that those that are asking for some type of fee are bad, because I think there are some that either nonprofits or have their hearts in the right place. It's just that just be careful that there are so many out there that may not necessarily be what you need. But yeah, I'm pleasantly I feel good that there are so many options now, because just 6 years ago when I left, there wasn't a lot. And that space has grown, and it's good. But one of the areas that I would like to see more of is just that encouragement to go, that entrepreneurship is an option, right? That you don't necessarily, because what we don't realize, and it took me a while to figure it out, and I've mentioned it before, is your military service, whether you were in for 4 years or 40 years, everything that you learned, that's a blueprint to be a business owner. Simple things, being on time,
Right, showing up. Yeah.
strategic thinking, resource management, customer service. I mean, my CEO was my customer every day. leading up, leading down, all of that comes into play when you're in business. It's just, obviously getting a little bit of that business education to help you stay successful and surpass the magic 5 years, I think it is, that you the Small Business Administration says.
You've made it, right,
You've
after
made
five.
it.
Yeah, really, really all great points, and thank you for bringing them up and being prepared for that too, because I think that makes it even more beneficial for the folks who are transitioning out. Anything else that you'd like to mention for folks who are transitioning out before we move to people who are hiring
Yeah,
veterans? Yeah.
I would just say that there's five things that I always say that were my takeaways for transition. Realize that self-reflection wasn't issued in your sea bag, right? You have to introduce yourself to yourself again. Okay, you just, like you said,
Number one, by the
number one,
way. Yes, yeah.
who am I? What without this uniform, who am I? Number two, get out of your own way. Right? Imposter syndrome is a roommate that lives with me. I tolerate it. it's always going to be there. And guess what? It's going to get worse the minute you step out of your comfort zone. Embrace it, right? It keeps you humble, but don't listen to it full time. Get out of your own head, get out of your own way. Leverage your resources. We've talked about that. And never stop learning, right? You cannot leave the military thinking that you knew everything in the military, and therefore you know everything that's going to happen in your next environment. It just don't walk into that new job and say, "Well, I was a captain in the Navy, and so I can do this." Or "I when I was a captain, when I was doing," that's the worst thing you can. That's the worst way to endear yourself to your new job.
Yeah, they get tired of hearing the like, well, in my day or when I did this, this is how it worked. Yeah.
And the fifth one I would mention is seek mentors and accountability buddies. The mentors obviously need to be willing participants. And I'll go back to LinkedIn. LinkedIn is a great place to kind of do a discovery about what it is you want to do. Maybe look for the company that you aspire to be with. Don't ask them for a job on the first date. That's rude. But reach out to someone who, and what I used to do is I'd go in and look at a place that interested me, and then I'd go in and look at their employee list to see if there's anybody there that had some type of connection to what I did. So it maybe it was a junior intelligence officer, somewhere in his resume. Now he's working in this institution that I want to be a part of, and I would just say, "Hey, we've never been stationed together, but I noticed we're from the same community. How'd you like working there? Or is there anybody that you can introduce me to talk to me about, jobs there or the mission there or something like that?" And I found that was very helpful because people want to help, when they see there's a connection.
incredibly valuable, right? Because the cultural fit for where you end up going next or first after transition is probably one of the most important things. And if you can speak plainly to another veteran that you have something in common with, or like, what's it like over there? I mean, is it hyper political? Is it just like being on the carrier, or is it, you know, what is it? And, you know, I think perhaps not everybody follows this train of thought, or this I don't know, character behavior, but we owe it to each other to be honest with each other and what's going on. Like, hey, I'm here, but I hate it here. Or hey, I'm here and I'm never going anywhere else because the leadership is great, the vision, you know, all that. There's inclusiveness and, you know, all that, right?
And these are things that you're not going to get off of the statement of work or really even in that interview, but you owe it to yourself to do the research, and maybe even ask pointed questions at the interview, because that interview, that's another thing to stress, is that interview when you go for that job isn't so much about them interviewing you. You're interviewing them. Do I want to work for you? What's your culture like? What's your remote work policy? Do you have one? How much on and on and on. And sometimes though, this is where your mentors come into play. You may not actually understand the lingo that re is required. I know when I went to my first interview, my ACP mentor, she and I prepped first, and she explained to me how I could ask for a bonus. I'm like, ask for a bonus? I haven't even been hired yet. What? How do you ask for a bonus? Well, what? Ask for more money on the first day?
Yeah, right.
I was shocked. I did get a 5,000 signing bonus because as a result of that.
Look at you. See, it works, right?
I would have never have thought to do that.
Sure, right. Well, who would? I mean, you don't do that in the Navy. Hey, you got a new duty station. Can I have a signing bonus? What? No. Get the hell out of here, right? Yeah.
Are your bags packed? Leave.
Yeah.
Yeah, so definitely, there's definitely a lot to learn. And even now, I'm 6 years removed, going into my 7th year of being out of uniform, and I still feel like sometimes that I'm still on leave, and they're going to call me back any minute now.
That might be a little trauma. We can work on that. We can work on that. Yeah. Well, mental health is so important, and I think also underlying your five, was it five? Five key points here is, you know, kind of do your research, right? Be picky. You can be picky. You know, there's a lot of, I got to survive. I don't care what it is. I just want to make money, all that type of thing. But man, don't waste 2 years of your life figuring out it was a mistake and you're making what you feel like is big money, but you're shredding your soul at the same time. You know, you don't need to carry that along. The upfront work is important. Go slow to go fast. And man,
Exactly. A
ask
great quote I heard, you need a job to get a job, right? Get that first job. And it's okay if it fails on first contact. It's okay. It's not called failure. It's actually called resigning. I learned how to write a couple of resignation letters myself. You're not quitting, big, right? And that's the thing. It's a mindset we have to get away from as being veterans, that you're mission failure, right? Or that you didn't keep your commitment. No. There's no commitment. This is a completely different, ball game. It's okay to leave, even if it's only 6 months. I'm speaking from experience, right? And either the values didn't turn out to be what you expected. Maybe it was a toxic work environment. Maybe the conditions changed, or maybe they lured you in under different, false pretenses. So many things, unknowns that you're not aware of, that you didn't see on Glassdoor, the applications that tell you what the rating system for that particular employer. And it's okay to leave, because what you may find is that short amount of time that you were with them actually opened doors to other opportunities that you wouldn't have had exposure to as a result of being there, right? And
Yeah.
relationships as well, too.
Yep. Well said. Well said. I think it's great, great advice. One of the things that perhaps is generational, and even if your career coming out of a career in the military, 20 years, whatever, I mean, you can get a variety of experiences in the corporate world or the entrepreneurial world. I mean, the entrepreneurial world also has, when does the money run out type of
And some
threat,
risk.
risk, right? But in the corporate world, I mean, there are a lot of people looking for talent, and you could, be a couple years here, you could be a couple years there. Used to be considered job hopping, isn't really anymore, and is more common, especially with the millennial sort of generation, more common to say, okay, well, I was here for 3 years. I think I learned what I could learn. Now I'm moving on, and it's okay. It really is okay. So great point, yeah. And don't put yourself into a box like your second one. Don't get out of your own way, right? So fantastic. Okay, so Laura, I think this last question, or maybe the next last question, anything for corporate hiring managers looking to hire veterans, any guidance you might have there, or any wisdom for folks who are seeking veterans as employees?
I would say that's a great question. For those employers, who say they're veteran friendly, make sure you are. And I mean that in the most professional way. If you've got veterans in your organization, leverage them to help find the talent you're looking for, because they're going to understand the culture and probably help you translate it better to whomever you're trying to recruit from the veteran world. And because I see or hear quite often that organizations who say they're veteran friendly aren't necessarily so. And I don't have any specifics. I'm being kind of general, trying to be politically correct. But recognize that, when you say you're veteran friendly, it means something. And I would just advise you to make sure that that is true, right? And know that, what you're getting is amazing talent. And some of the people that come to your front door may not necessarily be able to translate that amazing talent. And that's where going back to some of those veterans that are already in your workforce might help you draw that information out, right? Because let's face it, all those who are going, all of us leaving, seeking a job, we may have the benefit of having a great mentor that tells us what to say during our first interview. But usually we're not. And we're overwhelmed. Like you say, we're rushing to find a job. I'm a head of household. I've got kids in school. I've got college to think about. I just need to get a job, before the mortgage is due. So they may not be in the position to be actually ready for that first interview. And so I do think if you truly are thinking about finding the right talent, you know that person was a nuke, and you know that they can do X, Y, and Z, and that's what your focus is in your company. They may not articulate it correctly, but that veteran that you have working, in your workforce who is also from that background, ask them how to pull that information out. I think it's a two-way street, if you truly want the talent. And I've actually worked for a few, as a photographer, a few organizations who have a huge stable of veterans. And I've seen some of the tactics they've made, going to, military veteran fairs, and I've actually participated in some of those fairs. UMGC does one. I'm going there for the fourth time this year, and they bring in all of these companies that are there interested in recruiting talent. And it's understanding how to speak to that audience, and not using stock photography that looks like we bought our uniforms at Walmart.
Right.
That's a no-no.
Without a doubt, my experience has been you're either these the companies in their support of veterans are either in it or they're not, and they can pretend to be in with a veneer of what's going on. And your advice is so spot on. I mean, if I was to read a resume for any branch of the service, particularly Navy, but most branches of the service, I could start the translation process probably more effectively than a general HR manager or any hiring manager, right? To get that going and to understand where the candidate's at and help them along the way. So yeah, great advice. Perfect. Thank you, Laura. Okay, is there anything we didn't cover today that you'd like to relate to listeners? I mean, you're going to give us some links, which are fantastic. Thank you. And you've done a lot of things in your career, still involved in a lot of areas. So any other links that you want to provide, we'll go ahead and make sure those are up there too. Any leadership or associations that you're involved into. But anything that we didn't cover that you wanted to mention before we wrap it up?
I'll also provide you some resources. As veterans, we have an inordinate amount of resources for entrepreneurship that we don't realize. Quite a few organizations provide free services to help us either start or expand our businesses. And so I'll give you a few links to those organizations I think would be helpful as well.
Oh, endorsed. Okay. And vetted. I like it. I like it. You've lived through it, so.
I've used many of them, so I can attest to them. So definitely, but I just think it's important to understand that during your transition time, that it's you're not alone. There's many of us who've gone through it, and expect some challenges. And just to rattle off a few in summary that I had a steam shock. Right, I talked about my resume being on my uniform, and now it's not. And that's something that you're going to have to learn how to get over. I also have a hard time placing value on my expertise and my time, right? Because the military told me on a pay scale exactly how much I was valued, and that doesn't translate in a civilian world. I also thought I was an amazing time management person, but that's a farce. You were managed. The Navy managed your time. And so you may find now that you're kind of discombobulated in terms of how to manage your time, that sometimes, especially as a small business owner, I struggle with that. Sometimes I don't get everything done that I want to because I'm distracted. But just know that you're not alone, and there's so many resources and so many people that want to help. And have had a similar experience, or can at least point you towards somebody who has had a similar experience. So,
Beautiful. Beautiful. So if folks want to get a hold of you.
if you want to get a hold of me, I'm everywhere. Your kids are probably connected to me on Instagram,
Probably.
TikTok. The easiest place to get a hold of me for photography services is my website, laurahatchetphotography.com. But in terms of transition, or if you want to talk about entrepreneurship, LinkedIn is probably the easiest place because I am responsive. And
I'll vouch for that. Yeah.
I try to be anyway. And LinkedIn has been good to me. So I've been on the platform for about 8 years now, and a lot of the success I've had with staying with the veteran community has been there, as well as getting business. It's a great B2B platform, business to business, as well as connections, like meeting you.
Right on. Networking. Yeah.
Exactly. Networking is important, definitely.
Well, fantastic. Well, before we close out, I just want to give a couple short notes to our listeners. First, I want to personally invite you to join us in Milwaukee in September of 2025, the 8th and 9th, for Mobius Connect Live. It's one of a kind event packed with real-world applications and valuable connections with fellow CVM practitioners and reliability professionals. I'll be hosting a special live episode of Veterans Connected at the event. This is a unique opportunity for us to come together, share stories, learn from each other, and dig into what it means to be a veteran in today's industry. So mark your calendars and register now. Can't wait to see you in Milwaukee. Second, to round out our show, we are seeking more veterans like Laura, female, as well as recently transitioned veterans. You don't have to be an 06 to be on here. You may be the first 06, actually, on here, too. I think we've got, no, oh, there might have been one other 06 from the Air Force, but it has been my sincere pleasure speaking with you, Laura, now multiple times. I'm proud to know you, and thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and your preparation and your experiences here with the community. And thanks also to Mobius for providing this platform to help both transitioning vets as well as those looking to hire them. Hooyah, Deep Sea. Hooyah, Laura Hatcher.
Hooyah, Deep Sea.
All right.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Veterans Connected. We'll see you back for another episode very soon. In the meantime, we hope to see you in the Veterans Connected community group, where you can meet Eric and fellow podcast guests and share with other industry veterans at MobiusConnect.com. We hope to see you there.